Look at me. What you perceive creates an illusion of who I am.
You don't know me.
You don't know me.
These arms hold the weight of my ambition. These hands craft efficiency. I build machines that gather light and give energy to my needs. Solar panels that power to make our future green.
You don't know me.
You just see me. My fingers are on the pulse of man's quest. I build robotics to inform what's next. In these innovations lie our success.
You don't know me.
I will belong to no limits. I code, I build, I create, I make.
You don't know me.
You don't know me.
You don't know me.
But you will.
Welcome to Geek Nerd Tech on Black Hollywood Live. Today, Apple kills its car ideas, but has some new ideas on how to start your car. Let's go.
You are tuned in to Black Hollywood Live's Geek Nerd Tech.
Don't be good, my nugget. Be great. After that government cheese, we eat steak. After them projects, now we on the states. I'm from the bottom, I know you can relate.
Welcome to GNT, Geek Nerd Tech, the show we break down tech news and nerd culture from a black and brown geek perspective. I'm Joe Braswell. I'm joined, as always, by my man, Akili Shine. What's up, Akili?
Yes, sir, man.
How you doing?
Very well, man. Don't be good, be great, bro. That's what we on.
F up the world.
We on excellence, man.
That's right. Good day. It seems like a decent day,
yes, sir,
around here. And were we here last week?
Yes, we were.
We heard we were here last week. We were in 2 weeks. So 2 weeks ago we did all
Google.
Yeah. Then we did all Facebook. And right. This time it's not going to be all Apple, but some Apple.
Apple.
We revisit some of the topics that we got an opportunity to talk about last week. But let's just jump right into this.
Let's go, man.
Apple. So first things first is Apple seems to be off the whole idea of doing a car. There's this whole thing that they were about. They're going to take on Detroit and do a car, and the Apple car, and they were in talks with it wasn't Tesla, but it was one of those high end supercar companies.
Yeah,
and I think we did that story here, but it looks like they're kind of taking their foot off the gas of that whole project. And maybe rightfully so.
Put off the gas.
I know what I did. I did that on purpose. But it seems like apparently what getting in the car business and is a little more complicated than the tech business.
Yeah, they've definitely been pumping their brakes.
Thank you, Marissa.
I agree that it's an interesting turn, in the sense that, Apple, when they kind of put out a statement of intent, like usually they have the infrastructure and the wherewithal to back that up, and they are taking a few steps back in the sense that they're saying we're not going to develop a car, but we're going to still want to innovate and develop the autonomous nature of vehicles, in the sense that cars are able to drive by themselves. So maybe developing the software that goes into cars is more of the strategy now. And I think that's just interesting. I think they were premature, and maybe their output of that idea, and just seeing how the current marketplace is in terms of how they source materials, and just the competitive nature of some of these companies that have been in business for decades, generations. And so just, and that is what Apple is known for, though, looking at a business or an industry and saying, hey, how can we do this better, reinvent it, and then smash it? Right. But I don't think it's going to be as easy to do this in the automotive industry as it's been in the communications industry. And so,
or the consumer electronics industry.
Exactly. Exactly.
It's one thing making a plastic thing in your hand, it's another thing making a gigantic moving part mechanism thing.
100%. But, they still have great potentiality to dominate the marketplace in terms of the landscape turning into more autonomous cars and autonomous vehicles. I think that they still have the software capability to be able to do that on a very competitive level. And I think that's something that we'll probably still see emerge.
I agree. We'll see. The interesting part about this is it looks like they're laying to lay some folks off. And Apple's not known
for, that's weird,
like, Apple's one was a job creator, but like they had a, you know, look, you have a whole automotive department, and it's like, sorry, we're not doing anymore. And it was like over 100 jobs that had to go.
That's crazy.
So I wonder if there'll be some disgruntled Apple people, like the Viv people, you know, and they're gonna go to Samsung with the Samsung car.
Yeah,
but we'll see. But that's interesting. We'll see how that turns out. But so Apple may not be in the car business. I mean, in the car business, but they want to stay in the car business as a caveat. They still want to place your car keys with Apple Touch. And we talked about this Apple's a long time ago when they were like, when the Touch came out, and you're like, they ain't gonna get me. And but we're talking about all the potential applications for this, and well, the Touch is one.
Yeah,
you know, basically, it being able to use your existing phone and start your car with your ID, which it seems smart.
Right,
but that technology is like now old, and people have doing a lot of different versions of that already.
Yeah, like, you know, for a number of years now.
So I don't know. So this is not that exciting, right?
I mean, I think in the basic expression of it, no, it's not exciting, but there has to be some more built-in functionality that they'll do with, you know, automobiles and iPhone. Like maybe it's, you know, change the temperature or turn on the air conditioning or the heater, which has already been developed as well. I mean, right. But I would assume they would have some other perks that are associated with, you know, being able to have the phone communicate with the car. But I do like the fact that, again, you know, these companies want to keep you in the ecosystem. So everything that you do, you know, you're using an Apple product to do it. And so I get the transference of power in that sense to that. Like, I think that is something that's inevitable. And maybe it's just like a starting place for, you know, what they'll do, you know, with other technology as it relates to cars. I mean, we already have, you know, the CarPlay built into a lot of cars now. So, I mean, all this is kind of like setting the table for other things that they might develop.
Are you still, you know, personally kind of like, dang, get my fingerprint. Are you still on that? Are you like, are you kind of like, all right, well.
I mean, we're going to cover a story today that kind of like touches on that. In a way, I'm very ambivalent about that still. Like, I'm definitely on the fence about, I think the technology is dope to be able to go into a store and just, you know, use the wallet functionality of the phone, and mm-hmm. it's swift and very convenient. But man, like I really don't trust the powers that be as it relates to that information. Not to say that I'm out there doing dirt and that I want my fingerprint, you know, associated with any criminal activity, but I just feel like that could be exploited and used for purposes that could be really be detrimental.
Well, this has been my lament about all this shit. It's like, we don't know. All this stuff is exciting, but we don't know where this is going to end up.
Exactly.
Facebook has so much information and so much metadata on all of us that who knows where they'll end up 10 years from now, what will that metadata be used to do?
Exactly.
You know, and same with Google and same with all these companies. So Apple's taking it one step further. They got your fingerprint.
Yeah.
You know, so.
But who's to say they don't already have it, even though I haven't, you know. Right. You know, done it personally, you know, I mean, I still use my fingerprint to do all the, to open up the phone. So
it goes right to the database.
Exactly.
Out of Cupertino.
Exactly.
where they're cloning a Keely Shine right now.
Hey.
All right.
It's better than making an Apple car.
That's true. All right. Stick with Apple. Apple. So there's been a lot of talk about AI. We talked about, you know, the guys who created Siri, who now have their company Viv. I think it's Viv because I think it's a woman who now at Samsung. There's been a lot of talk about Cortana. There's been a lot of talk about the new Google situation, the new Google Assistant, which is supposed to be on point. Apple, the people who introduced Siri to the world, is now like way back there. And so I think that they feel like they have to do something. Siri is kind of, I mean, look. Siri is, I ride for Apple, but Siri is a little buggy.
Siri sucks. Come on, let's keep it 100. It sucks.
Siri's a little
like,
buggy.
Like, do you use Siri? Honestly.
I know.
Like, who uses it?
I don't use it at all.
Exactly.
But, so, I think that this is their attempt to say, like, so they brought in this new director of AI, who's supposed to come in, who's from Carnegie Mellon.
Right.
He's a super smart cat, and I think they want to, his name is, I can't, is he Russian? It's Ruslan Sakalakatukadanov.
I can't stand you.
Sakalakatukadanov.
You sound like the dude from Maine, the governor from Maine, anyway.
Shifty smoothie.
That's terrible.
Empty money.
That's terrible.
Did you read that one?
I did. It's terrible.
Oh, sorry, it was so bad. All right. Anyway, don't go to Maine if you're black or Latino or not white. Anyway, all right. So, Ruslan Sakhunatov, Still not right. He's a deep learning expert at Carnegie Mellon, and he's got his Apple's brought on. He's going to continue to teach and do a thing at Carnegie Mellon and research there. Right. He'll also be working with Apple, and this means something, right?
It does. Yeah, I think it definitely means something. And using the best minds on the planet to help develop and pursue, you know, the future frontier of artificial intelligence, which I think we'll all have a strong investment in the sense that, you know, we all use apps now, and now we're starting to really get into the whole bot technology, and which is a form of artificial intelligence. But having a smarter, autonomous being that's able to like really dialogue with us and has you know a more human and machine way of thinking that can source information way faster than a human can. I think, you know, having this guy at the table, you know, being a leading academic. And giving him the resources to be able to explore this through the infrastructure of Apple, I think is an amazing opportunity. And I think he's going to come up with something really dope.
Yeah, we'll see.
And they have to. I'm sorry, they have to, because, like you said, Apple is not leading in this arena. They haven't invested as much time and money as other companies have. Like Google is killing these guys.
Well, this brings to our next story. I mean, I'll just bleed this right into Google. So the reviews are in on the Google Pixel, and they're pretty good. I mean, people are saying that this thing is fantastic. I think they're, you know, the design is very minimal, which people are saying is great. And most people think it looks like an iPhone. Yeah. They're saying that all of the functionality is great. It has its own sort of Touch ID thing. But not where the home button is. It's got it up top,
yep.
Which is a different place.
Yeah.
The phone's a little thicker, which gives it a little doesn't have a little bump for the camera.
Right.
People are really into this phone, but the most important feature and the most thing that was really freaking people out is the assistant feature.
Yeah.
Like it is actually it's closer to Her, the movie Her with Scarlett Johansson 100%. And what's his name? Joaquin Phoenix,
yeah.
Than it is Siri.
Yeah.
So, and they're actually making appointments, reminding you of stuff, exactly. Actively doing things that Siri claims to do.
Well, like, yeah. Just to piggyback on that, like, when you ask Siri a question, Siri's going to say, I'll recommend you to a web page, a Wikipedia page. What Google Assistant is doing, if you ask it a specific question, it's going to try to attempt to give you a factual answer. Right. Like, it's conversational versus linking you to a page.
Yeah, let me take a look at that.
Exactly.
Google's like, you want to get pizza? I will give you 5 pizza websites.
Exactly.
Thanks.
Versus
Siri.
Google Assistant is telling you to go to Roundtable.
Right.
Or whatever. You know?
Or whatever. Yeah. But it's even more intuitive in terms of like planning your day and getting you through your day. Mm-hmm. You know, Siri does this too, but it's not the same. Like, don't forget you have an appointment at 3:30. You're going to hear, get a call from this, and don't forget to send this text message to Akili. We're running here. Mm-hmm. Oh, I know you like pizza on the street. There's a good pizza place. Don't forget, you know, you like movie. Your movie you like is starting today. It's at 3:45 or sometimes. Or, you know, maybe you could talk to so and so. I saw, which gets kind of scary. Like, you like, I saw in a text message that you were talking about.
Hey, I gotta say, man, hats off to Google and what they're doing with the Google Pixel. I mean, the first iteration of, you know, hardware, software that they're controlling everything like Apple. I think they are the closest to really come for Apple's throats as it relates to, you know, the smartphone business and communications. Like, but obviously they dominated with the software and, you know, Android and being able to, you know, license that to other hardware manufacturers. But now that they have both combined and their first, you know, smack at the plate, you know, they're hitting a home run. Like, I think that really says a lot.
It does say a lot. I think that, like, you know, this is generation, you know, one. I mean, it's a long way away from the Android, but, you know, yeah, like, who knows what the next few versions will be out. So,
exactly.
The people are saying we should wait because the new Galaxy's coming out. Galaxy 8, I guess, is coming.
It has to come.
And then the new iPhone, whatever the iPhone's. But I will stick what I said. I can say that I can't guarantee that I'll, based on what I'm seeing here, I can't guarantee that I'll be Apple person for life. It's not a threat.
Hey, man. It's blurred lines, bro.
I don't know. I haven't checked it out yet, but I'm like, I could see, you know, going over to the whole universe.
Me too. The lines of demarcation are blurring.
We'll see. All right, so moving on to the next thing. Actually, why don't we talk about some DraftKings right now while I figure out what the next thing is, because DraftKings, we're deep in the football season. Most of you guys, if you're like me, your football season, fantasy football season is sucking. I am like, I think I'm 1-4 in one league and 3 in something in another league.
Oh my.
I'm 2 in something in another league. So I'm not doing good. So what I do rely on falling back on DraftKings, because every single week I can go and choose a brand new team, brand new everybody else. I can do it multiple times, multiple teams, and also win big money. It's the destination for 1 week fantasy football. Never again. have to worry about injuries coming in and ruining your season. You get a brand new team every week, as I said. There's a bunch of different contests, 50-50 contests, where the top half of all the entries win cash. If your current fantasy team is circling the drain like mine is, you can still win huge prices at DraftKings. So check it out. Don't wait. Start your new season at DraftKings.com right now. Use the promo code GEEK and play for free with your first deposit. That's promo code GEEK. Play for free. You can share over $1 million in total prizes this weekend only at DraftKings.com. Eligibility restrictions may apply. Check the website for details. DraftKings.com. Promo code GEEK. All right. So, this way. So, speaking of the Galaxy Note, so the Galaxy Note 8 are coming out soon, but 7s are blowing up on planes. They're exploding. So, that's an issue that came back from the airport. You're not really allowed to have one. If you do, you have to power it all the way down.
No. You can't have it. It's a federal law. You cannot have it on a plane.
Oh, because it was true. You can't have it. I think they still give the warning, because I heard someone say, like, if you have one on you, power it down. And get rid of it, do whatever. They don't say, raise your hand, we'll come take it. But I think they don't. You're not supposed to have it on the phone at all. I mean, on the phone, on the plane at all.
Yeah, right? It's federal law. Okay. It's against the law to have it on the plane now.
All right. Wow. Okay. Well, yeah. So what they're doing about this is Samsung decides, in a really very good PR move, to set up booths at the airport to exchange out those Note 7.
Exactly.
Which is good. But that seems like if you're in a hurry at the airport.
I mean, you ain't trying to do that.
Like, you got to dabble all your info.
That's a hassle.
Switch over phones.
Man, just getting to the airport without all of that is a hassle. Like, to add this as an extra step, like, it's ridiculous. It sucks for the person that bought this phone.
Yeah.
But, hey.
But at a certain point, there's some things you have to do for PR, for appearances. This is a PR situation, clearly.
Explain it.
Samsung can't be known as doing nothing.
Right.
Like, sorry. It comes to, so that there's a proactive step to say, hey, at all airports, if you need your phone, we're here for you. We made the mistake. We're going to go the extra mile. We'll change out your phone before you get on your plane. Now, it's all PR, because it's the practicality of you running through with your bags and stopping to upload your information to a new phone, open a box, do the whole thing. But it's PR.
You got to do something.
So moving on, this is a great story. This is back to what you're saying. This is really interesting. Looks like the feds have figured out. I'm going to skip this one, Marissa, but the feds have figured out a way to use a search warrant to be able to get into locked iPhones.
See, man, this is ridiculous.
It's an interesting loophole. Now, it's an interesting loop, because if someone comes to your crib and they have a search warrant, and your closet's locked, they can be like, open it up, I got a search warrant. If you got a safe, even, open it, join up, I got a search warrant for the safe. Now, you can be like, I don't have a combination, but you're supposed to do that. Like, you're legally bound to do that. That's what search warrant does. So if someone comes to your crib and your phone's out there, open it up.
Yeah,
a search warrant. It's in your house, on your property. Mm-hmm. It's on your person. That's a real. I mean, I'm not rooting for it. That's a really interesting, good loophole.
100%.
What do you think?
I mean, I think it's a loophole that they found and they've exploited. I don't think it'll hold up with the Fourth and Fifth Amendment. I think it'll probably go to the Supreme Court, and that's something that will be argued against and ruled against. I feel like. I mean, we had this conversation many times, especially when the San Bernardino shootings happened, and the FBI wanted to have access to those people's phones, and Tim Cook and Apple said, no, we can't do that. We stand with the consumer and the consumer's rights, and we're not going to allow you to give you the backdoor technology or information to be able to crack our technology. And so we stand by that, and I feel like our rights will be protected. And just to say, like, you have a general warrant, and you can be able to look in anyone's phone and demand that they use their fingerprint to open up the phone in front of you, like, that is very ballsy. I mean, that's one reason why I feel really ambivalent about using the technology, because it's like, again, you don't know how that information is going to be exploited. They take the phone. Who's to say they can't open it up anyway? But like, all that is in the conversation, and it needs to be questioned and deeply analyzed.
It's what we talk about, the legal curve not being that catch up to the technology curve. The technology curve is always going to have a legal curve. But like, I got to ask you, like, in the 70s or in the 80s, man, I'm watching Narcos now and stuff, but like, you know, what would you do? Like, if you had, I mean, where would all you, what would be the equivalent of a thing that had all the information that you had in your phone? Like, what is the equivalent of that? Is that like your Rolodex on your thing, your locked Rolodex, your safe,
might be your account,
your books, your account, whatever.
Yeah, it might be so all of that.
So when someone comes in and wants to get all that stuff, they would have to do it. Like, I don't care if it's from the Elliot Ness days all the way to the, you know, to the, the COINTELPRO days to like now, you know? Yeah. So like, I don't know. I mean, I on one hand, it makes sense. I just don't know. I don't know where I sit on this. I mean, I think it's, are you saying for the average citizen that nothing sacred, is there a place where you can have, this is my personal private thing, they're not allowed to get into this? Or,
I mean, I think it has to have a degree of say a sacredness, in the sense that we even covered a story about police pulling you over, and because they might suspect that something might be in your car, they want to look into your phone. Like, where are the lines drawn? Like, so there has to be some type of buffering, you know, that protects us, and because our phone really is an extension of ourselves. Like, we have everything in here, from photos to our thoughts to our communications. Everything is baked into this thing. So we have to have some sense of security around it that protect us from people that we don't want to see it.
But you can make the argument that so is your home. My home is the most sacred place. I'm at my house. I'm in my house. I'm at my closet. I don't want to dig into my closet, going through my drawers, my drawer, my bed. Who knows what I got in there? It's my sacred place. So if someone comes with a search warrant, guess what? Everything, even old school, like in the old days, like, oh, give me all the floppy disks. Mm-hmm. And I'm taking all the computers.
Okay,
I mean, like, that's just what they do. So I don't know. I mean, I guess it's really about we're looking at it from a legal perspective.
Take my phone, but don't demand that I have to use my fingerprint to open it up for you.
Right.
And that's what they're saying. Because I have the search warrant, now you have to put your finger on it so that I can see what's in it.
That's,
or I have to give you the passcode so you can see what's in it. Yeah. I don't have to give that to you.
Okay, that's what you're saying. That's what you're saying. It's a very interesting, and scary reality that we're faced with. But I like asking those legal questions, legal versus technical questions. So what's this one? This is the AR, the augmented reality, the smartphone lens. I'm gonna skip that one too. Actually, I'm sorry. Do you want to hit on that one, Akili?
Oh, I mean, just briefly. I mean, I'll set it up in the sense that we talk about all the time, virtual reality, augmented reality, and how a lot of companies are developing content that, you know, we can use for a number of purposes, be it medical purposes, legal purposes, entertainment purposes. And this thing is kind of cool because it's using contact lenses and putting sensors within the contact lenses where you are walking and you're walking and engaging in the world, but you have this augmented reality literally on your eyeball.
Yeah.
It's connected
Black
to
Mirror.
Exactly. It's connected to your phones, connected to your devices, and other platforms and other brands can create content that you can, like, for instance, this is an example, you might be in a museum and looking at various artifacts, and you have these contacts on, and it's giving you, you know, maybe it's creating a world for you as you look at this artifact, how it existed in that time period. You know what I'm saying? I mean, there's tons of examples that you could come up with, but I think this is super cool. I don't know. I would advocate for it, but I think it's super cool.
I'm out. It's too close to that. Again, like, everything goes back to either a Minority Report or Black Mirror. But
what's the difference of having the goggles on versus having contacts on?
Because
wearing glasses and having contacts on.
Passive versus active, I guess. It's just the idea that it's because the next step, once it's in there, the next step is
in your bloodstream.
The implants.
Right.
The little implants that come in. Recording your thoughts, recording your memories. Yeah. Rewind that shit. What did Akili say? Like, zoom in.
It's inevitable, though, man.
Yeah.
It's inevitable.
It just reminds you of that, which is a little scary. All right. And what about this Disney thing? Disney's going to retell classic stories to the LA Museum and Snapchat. Do you have that one?
Yeah.
I'm saying that because my
I mean, that's kind of what I was alluding to, in the sense that that's what they're kind of doing now with augmented reality.
Right.
But using it through the platform of Snapchat, where you're able to have, you know, have it conversational, where LACMA can create, you know, these augmented reality bits that you can play with within the app of Snapchat, but you can also, you know, have your own type of postings and whatnot. But, you know, adopting that technology, instead of it being on your phone, now it being in your contacts, and that's kind of what I was referring to. But yeah, I mean, I think this is very cool in the sense of how it's used educationally, how a museum is trying to connect to a younger audience, millennials, in the sense of, hey, we have all this great art and artifacts and inf- information that, you know, typically, you know, we haven't been able to market well to you, but we're using Snapchat. We're speaking to you where you are and making it kind of like fun and comical, but still educational.
Right.
I love that idea. And just to see, you know, LACMA being one of the biggest museums in this country using that technology and doing it very well.
Absolutely. Yeah, and I agree. I think that it could be very cool. And LACMA's really doing a lot. The huge expansion they have with the Academy Awards Museum coming up and all this cool stuff coming up. I mean, you know, it is at the forefront of all that. Mm-hmm. I want to talk about Netflix for a second here because we were just talking about off mic about Netflix and what they're doing lately, you know, and their money. But Netflix is, again, breaking records in terms of what they've done, and they've had another record year. Due largely to the success of Stranger Things and Narcos season 2, which I am not there yet. I'm still in season 1.
Are you tripping, bro?
I'm tripping, but because I'm like,
Bandidos.
I got, I'm like episode 4. I'm like, where? How come I wouldn't watch? How did I not watch this? Narcos.
Yes, I'm so. I thought you watched it.
I'm not knowing.
Oh shit, you tripping, bro?
It was all the noise on Narcos season 2 that got me like, all right, let me check it out. And I'm all like, right. Oh. Yeah, so Narcos is incredible. So Narcos 100. Season 2 is actually bigger than people are letting on. Netflix is just starting to, like, they never released the numbers per se, but they're saying that Narcos Season 2 is one of the biggest things that's ever hit their air.
Yeah.
You know,
and Stranger Things.
I know that's the international appearance, Stranger Things, of course. Yeah. But you would think there's all, you know, there's Luke Cage and there's House of Cards and there's all this other stuff, but like Narcos Season 2 is really blowing up. So Netflix is not slowing down anytime soon.
Man, Netflix has gobs of money. They're saying that within 2017, they want to develop 1,000 hours of original content. Mm. And I mean, they're kind of shifting their business model from acquisition and trying to do these licensing deals with, you know, pre-existing legacy content and developing their own content, which they can own completely and then license out, which I think is genius. And the fact that, I mean, obviously they're winning Emmys. They're setting themselves up to really increase, subscriptions. And within this quarter alone, I think subscriptions are about a million plus from what they estimated it would be, which is crazy. And the amount of profit that they're making within this one quarter is beyond what, you know, anyone estimated them to ever do.
I think the best kept secret, which is what people don't really talk about, is these deals, all these licensing things, they're not in perpetuity. Like Netflix is licensing this stuff, so stuff goes away.
Exactly.
So they may have Minority Report on for like 3 years, but then 3 years
it's gone. Exactly.
Like,
unless they re-up.
Yeah. And what's happening is that, as you see, all these other studios have their own properties. Like, at one point, everyone wanted to go to Netflix. Now, no one's going to want to go to Netflix. You're not going to see Amazon stuff on Netflix.
But Netflix is like, fuck
you. You're not going to see HBO stuff on Netflix pretty soon. You do now.
We don't need to license Minority Report. We'll make our own.
Not yet. That's their move. But right now, they're not quite there yet. But that's why they're so aggressively, if they do 1,000 hours a year in 5 years, you come to Netflix and we have all Netflix shit and it's all dope.
Man.
So, and that's a good model. And if they keep doing quality, the question will be, will they be able to maintain the quality? You know, or will the quality be diluted doing 1,000 hours of original programming every year? And they want to up that.
Yeah.
So, because they're able to get to where they are on their entire ecosystem now, they've got to do thousands and thousands of hours tens of thousands of hours on Netflix with all movies and documentaries and everything else. So for Netflix to get rid of most of that stuff and get to even 50-50, they have a long way to go and a lot of money to spend, but it could be worth it because they will own 100% own all that IP and own us, you know?
So let me run a question by you. So Netflix, in my mind, was kind of like the place for, you know, obviously innovation and almost like the antithesis to what the industry represented, the television industry represented. Mm-hmm. And now they're becoming this huge behemoth, right? Do you think that they're becoming what they were advocating against?
Yes and no. I think that the no is they're still doing things. We have a story about YouTube, which reminds me very similar. They're still doing things their way. They're not doing the traditional television model, which is we have a pilot and then the advertisers have to talk to us and we're beholden to advertisers and all that. They're not any of that shit. They're just doing whatever they want to do. However, and they are doing because of the subscription model, they're able to do things like HBO and develop long tail develop stuff, green light stuff like that, spend $100 million, look at it again, spend another $100 million. Like, who cares?
Right.
Networks can't do that. Networks are corporations, the shareholders.
I don't mean in terms of the mechanics of how television works. and how, you know, things are developed. I'm talking about from a creative perspective. Right. Like, hey, I'm a creator, well, and I can't break into the traditional television industry. Netflix is the place to be. But now Netflix is, like, killing.
That's my yes and no.
Okay.
That's my yes. The yes is yes. From the no from that standpoint. The yes is they are different because you're hearing it now. Like, this whole idea of, like, here's $100 million, David Fincher. Let me know what you do, and I'll put it on the air. Like, that's not happening anymore.
Right.
It's like, here's $50 million, and we now have, like, five new Netflix executives who are going to come and hang out with you.
Exactly.
So, I mean, it's not all freedom and all, like, here's your money, go away and come back and we'll put it on our air. You have some development and some executives, yeah. And as the company gets larger, you have people with their fingers in the pie. But from what I understand, they're all smart and good people.
Right.
They're hiring away all the good and smart people. But will it turn into a bunch of execs and will you get noted to death and less money?
Exactly.
Who knows?
Exactly.
You know, who knows? That's where Amazon comes in.
I think it's just interesting times, man, because last week we talked about the possibility of Netflix being acquired by, you know, one of the big
Amazon,
the big four.
Amazon, Apple.
Exactly. Google or Disney.
Google or Disney.
Like, I mean, now we hear these numbers of just how much they're really killing the game, even though they're still not, you know, releasing numbers in terms of the analytics of how people watch the content. But in terms of the money they're making, like, yo, it's pretty amazing to see what they've been able to do in such a short period of time.
It's incredible.
Like,
it's incredible. I mean, but it's also even more incredible to me, to your point, as much money as Netflix making, like, you talk about Amazon is 8x, Disney's 3x, yeah. Apple's 12x.
Exactly.
Like, how much money is Apple making?
Exactly.
12x, Netflix. Like, they found Netflix in the corner of their couch, like in their seat cushion. Netflix money.
Hey.
Like, that's really interesting. It reminds me of that old joke. I think it was Chris Rock joke the whole time of, like, no, Shaq isn't rich. The dude that writes checks is rich. Here you go, Shaq. You know, that guy's rich. And that's kind of like, what?
You see that? But that's one thing that Netflix is beginning to do more and more, and that's the expansion internationally, in the sense that they've tried to, you know, have the platform exist in China, but obviously that was shut down. And so they want to still be able to license Netflix original content to China. But what they're doing in terms of expanding it to other markets within the world, and a lot of the programming that we see, you know, they're having it in the language of that country, and just the offering capability of getting more subscribers internationally. The potential of that is super high, and we talk about them banking in now. Like, they have so much latitude in terms of how much money they can potentially make, not just domestically, you know.
Wow. I mean this is just money. Lots of money. Speaking of which, YouTube Red, who kind of early on announced that YouTube is going to be into the original programming space and movie space. It was originally sort of talked about that YouTube would be closer to a Netflix. You can go and rent movies there. They're going to have original programming. They're coming on there. And then it was like, we're also doing prestige programming, and we're also embracing our stars. Well, now YouTube's doing a couple of other things. They're saying, like, we're not doing any of that. We're going to focus on being our own brand. We don't know what that is yet, but we know YouTube is basically a lot of user-generated content. We've built our own stars. We have bajillions of views. And so now we have a place where, just like Facebook did, mm-hmm. stars can come to us and develop stuff within our YouTube ecosystem. Mm-hmm. So what they're doing is they're developing shows. They've got a huge money project with The Rock.
Yeah.
They got a huge money project with Doug Liman, from Swingers and Born Identity and Mr. and Mrs. Smith fame. And Doug's been doing some virtual reality stuff. So what they're trying to do is figure out how they can utilize these big stars and these big talent, but still do in a way that YouTubers and millennials are used to consuming material.
Yeah.
I think it's very interesting because, like, again, the way my daughter consumes media
is much different.
Way different. She does a lot of YouTube. I mean, whether it's clips, whether it's clips of movies, whether it's user-generated content. Mm-hmm. So to incorporate The Rock coming to YouTube, just like they come to Snapchat, just like they come to Facebook.
Yeah.
I think it's smart. What do you think?
Well, I agree completely. I mean, definitely the viewing habits of the millennial generation is much different than, you know, other generations, other demographics. And I think that the way they're able to capture that audience is very good. And I think having The Rock, I mean, I think that's a great move. And just, how they kind of use a grassroots approach in terms of nurturing the YouTube stars and having them now having more budget to create more compelling content. I think that's great, great feeder, great kindling for, you know, starting other fires of talent that want to also create content, and just having that as a model is what I'm saying. I think is a great thing. However, I don't know if YouTube Red can be and will be in the conversation of Netflix, Hulu, or if Apple or Facebook or Amazon really start ramping up their content machine. I don't see YouTube Red as being a dominating factor. You know, I think they have a good market share. It's niched out. I don't really see that expanding out. I can't see it. You know, I haven't seen anything. I haven't seen any franchise that they built or any piece of original content that is like award winning.
You're talking about what their trajectory is based on what you see right now.
Exactly.
So here's what I'll tell you to that. I would agree with that, except for the fact that in 2012, mm-hmm. Netflix wasn't doing original programming.
Yeah.
In 2013, they dropped, and that was 3 years ago. Yeah. Netflix is dominant. Three years, right?
Right.
What they were before that was, you know, they were mailing you movies and shit, right? And doing streaming. So my point is, YouTube is YouTube. They already have a huge base of a huge user base, a huge sort of brand name recognition.
Yeah.
So once you announce the pivot and you invest in the pivot, I'm not saying it'll work, but who knows what YouTube what they'll be in 2019? YouTube will have in 2019.
Who knows what Netflix will be in 2019?
Exactly. 2019, it could be like we could all be consuming what our TVs will look like, what those buttons will look like, with the YouTube button, the Netflix button, the this button. It's not going to matter.
But it's a certain culture that YouTube has, you know, that I think it will be hard tonally to shift, because when I go to YouTube, and I know it's different because I'm not in the age demographic exactly that they're targeting. Yeah. When I go to YouTube, it's to find information, or it's more searching.
Well, you use a search. Exactly. You use, like, use Google.
Exactly. I don't have the tonality that's kind of attracting me to want to sit there and watch content for hours and hours. Like, it's not presenting itself that way to me.
See, you know? I disagree with that. I mean, I do agree with how you do it. But I'm saying what's interesting about that is I do that. And I'm not a millennial by a lot. But
you
do
watch hours and hours back-to-back of YouTube content? You binge watch on YouTube?
It's been known to happen. Hours and hours, I don't know. But we'll see, so the Netflix, Netflix is known. You get there. You turn on Netflix. I might see you over the weekend. Turn on Netflix on Friday. You come out on Sunday. I get that.
Right.
But on YouTube, it's not that bad. But YouTube does have its own version of rabbit holes. I'll go in. I'll like Google. James Brown. And I'll be next thing I'm watching, like, I don't know, I find myself watching 45 minutes of James Brown videos.
Right.
And then that's like, James Brown was on the Tammy Show. What else? Rolling Stones were on Tammy Show. Then I'm watching an hour of Rolling Stone videos.
Right.
And then Mick Jagger, Michael Jackson. Then I'm watching 2 hours of Michael Jackson videos.
That is not original content, my man.
But neither was Netflix. My point is that if they get it to the point where they're generating the stuff, once they have you, YouTube is very good at keeping you engaged on that YouTube.
Okay.
And Netflix is too, with original programming. And Netflix does a thing where it's like, you want to watch another episode? Want to watch another episode? That's different. That's different from the way YouTube does it, which is like, here's 10 more things you might like.
Yeah.
I'm like, shit. So who knows what they'll do? I mean, I don't know.
I agree in that sense. But I'm talking about YouTube Red. I'm talking about their original content. I have not watched fully one bit of that.
I will say this. Their initial strategy right this very second, like with rolling out their YouTube stars and having these YouTube Red movies, is horrible.
Goodbye.
And they spent a lot of money on giant billboards on Sunset and a lot of.
We even covered that story.
Corny. The unicorn chick.
Exactly.
The weird Power Team 5 or whatever.
Good night.
Like Hannah Hart doing whatever. I'm out.
Yeah.
So now The Rock, Doug Liman, I might be in. Yeah. So we'll see how it works out.
True that.
Last but not least, before we get out of here, we should talk about this last thing. What was? Oh, your boy Leo. This is right in your wheelhouse, actually.
Right in my wheelhouse.
No, it is. I'm just too old for Captain Planet, and I think you're just right in the zone. And as is Leo. And so Leonardo DiCaprio is producing the new Captain Planet situation. Now, Captain Planet is, for you don't know, is a cartoon, kind of like a character that came out in the early 90s. I would say like 91, 92, somewhere in there. Basically, an eco-friendly superhero.
Mm-hmm.
Could not be more on the nose or on the head or more like bullseye of a, like, you know, premise. It's a little corny, loving me a lot corny.
Yeah.
But for a lot of kids, that IP means a lot to a lot of kids. I think that there's two things I want to talk about. I want to talk about the fact that this existing IP that is terrible IP, mm-hmm. but means a lot to a certain group of people when they were young, therefore you can make a movie out of it, yeah. a la Jim and the Holograms, yeah. or Mighty Morphin Power Rangers.
Yeah.
Captain Planet's in that. And the second thing I'll talk about is, you know, Leo is obviously an eco guy.
Yeah.
He's obviously of the right age. What do you think this works?
I think it works. I think... I would say two things. I love the fact, I love the, you know, the quote Karis one. I love the edutainment value mm-hmm. of it, especially where we are as we have political discussions surrounding climate change and, you know, what we're doing in terms of renewable energy and what our responsibility is as individuals to this world and society is as it relates environmentally and what we do, what our carbon footprint is, you know? And so having this kind of like as an educational tool, but also as an entertainment output, I think is great. And having Leo advocate that and put his celebrity behind it, I think is great because, you know, yeah, obviously he already has documentaries that deal with this topic. You know, he goes around the country speaking. I mean, he's done a lot of stuff with Obama in terms mm-hmm. of different forms. So I think to be able to use...
He's had sex with every woman in every continent.
In every environment.
Every environment.
So, yeah, I mean, I think that if it's done right, if the cheese is kind of scraped away,
right.
I think it could be really cool for kids. And yeah, I'm interested to see, you know, how they roll that out and what the platform is that they roll it out in.
Cheese is scraped away. My man's got a mullet and a planet on his, like, a gentleman. We'll see.
Yeah, we'll see.
You know, I tell you this, if Leo plays Captain Planet, career over.
Goodbye.
His career is finished.
He would never do that.
He would never do that. He's too smart for that. Yeah. But if Leo's in the blue makeup.
No.
And the planet emblem.
Stop it.
Career over.
That would be terrible.
So what about this, the idea, this notion of like IP coming back? And this, you know, look, there's people of a certain age, mostly your age right now. You're the perfect age because executives and creators who decide like, oh, I love this as a kid.
Yeah, the revamp.
Back. So, yeah. You know, we see it with Power Rangers.
Ghostbusters.
We see it with, well, Ghostbusters is a revamp. But I'm thinking about like stuff that there were toys. So,
oh, okay,
like, I feel like Power Rangers, like yeah. Jim and the Holograms, right, the movie, right. Like all these different movies that are coming out. Trolls, exactly. Right. Thank you, Marissa. Trolls. Like, what do you think? Like, my thing is, I understand the money grab. I understand the affection.
Yeah.
But doesn't the IP have to be good? Is Trolls really good IP? Trolls, it really... Is Jim and Marissa...
It was a good IP when in its first in origination?
No, that's my whole point.
But it made gobs of money.
But when you check in for Jim and the Holograms, Marissa... Like you're the right age too. Like, I mean, Ninja Turtles is one thing. Like
Ninja Turtles, maybe. I mean, that's a franchise that's had a lot of television shows.
Sure, and it came from comics,
exactly.
Stuff. So, like, that's still been in our pop culture today.
Right.
I feel like Trolls went away for a while, but people know what Trolls are.
I mean, Smurfs, G.I. Joe. Yeah. I don't know.
With
I mean,
but Stretch Armstrong.
They're making a Stretch Armstrong movie. They're finally after Mattel, after literally after 10 years of development, they finally greenlit. This is one of the worst things I've ever heard. They greenlit the Hot Wheels movie. Hot Wheels the movie. Thing has been in development for 10 years. They finally cracked the code on Hot Wheels.
But kids still play with Hot Wheels.
I know, but here's like, the worst part about Hot Wheels. This is the worst. Directed by Justin Lin. He already got a franchise, Fast and Furious. What's he going to do with Hot Wheels?
Hey, he has the best point of view to be able to do a story or stories about cars, the fascination with cars.
Disney did it. It's called Cars.
It's okay.
All right.
It's okay.
Marissa, are you going to the Hot Wheels movie?
Probably not.
How many Marvel movies can we see? How many DC movies can we see? But we still see that in TV film and all that, like, year after year.
But you're on board. We got it. But you're on board. Like, Achilles Studios, you're running Achilles Studios. I'm like, I got the hot, it's, I can't think of the worst thing. It's Eraserhead, you know, the movie.
From a kid's perspective, man, that might be the most amazing thing.
All right. Etch-a-Sketch, the movie. That's Slinky the movie.
Wow. that's ridiculous.
Sometimes IP, not all IP should be movies. That's all I'm making. All right, let's get out of here. That's all I really got. Anything you're looking forward to this week? I will say Black Mirror, the new Black Mirror is coming on the 21st. I cannot be more excited. That trailer is freaking me to F out. You know, of the seven that are done, I think that are out there, there's like three that I love, you know, two that I like. other ones are all right, but this trailer looks insane. I'm excited about that. I'm still liking Luke Cage. What are you excited about?
I would say I'm excited
Jack
about
Reacher.
No, definitely not. what was I studying or watching? Now I'm drawing a blank. You put me on the spot. I would say that, you know, I would say for today, I'm really interested to see what happens in the debate.
Yes.
In terms of, and I don't mean that in the sense of just the political conversation, but social media wise, I'm interested to see like how, I mean, it's kind of been a downgrade from the first debate being about 100 million viewers, the second one being about 60 million. I wanted to see if the number goes up or down, and like how, what the Twitter talk is like. But in terms of popular culture, I think we've kind of touched on everything. I'm still watching Luke Cage and Atlanta. Are you caught up with Atlanta?
I missed this last week.
Okay.
Wait. I'm caught up.
Okay.
I'm caught up.
Yeah, I mean, that's about it.
Yeah. Because it's today. No, I missed yesterday.
Yeah.
I'm not caught up. Okay. Yeah, I missed yesterday. All right, well, I'll check out yesterday's Atlanta. I agree with all that stuff. Maybe we can talk about the debate next week and from a social media standpoint. That's all we got. Where can people find you?
You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at AkiliShine, AkiliShine. And you?
And you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Joe K. Braz, on Snapchat at JK Braz. Thank you, Marissa, very much. We'll see you next week.
From executives Kevin Undergaro, Gary O'Kristen, Tiana Hobson, and the entire BHL staff, we would like to thank you for supporting Black Hollywood Live, the first online broadcast network dedicated to African-American entertainment. For questions and comments, contact us. info@blackhollywoodlive.com. Like us on Facebook, tweet us, or Instagram us at BHL Online. And I am the official voice of Black Hollywood Live, Scipio, Instagram me, at KingXOBay. Thanks for tuning in. The views expressed here are those of the host only and do not necessarily reflect the views of BHL or its owners or principals.